Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Folgers in your cup, or maybe the Aldi or Sam's Club or Kroger brand, whatever your beverage of choice is. Make some more, get out the creamer and sweetener. It'll be well worth it. Stay alert. We have some great political and current event related commentary featuring myself and the professor, Dr. Ron Fineman from Boca Raton, Florida, coming up in a few short seconds. I'm going to go ahead and get the cables plugged in. Be sure that A properly is attached to B. I have done a sound check, turned up the pots. That's radio talk, by the way. Crossed my fingers a couple times, and I'm sure all will be well. I've been doing audio production in some capacity since the early 80s, so I would say by now I should know what I'm doing. Coming up after the show, by the way, Linda Sims discussing anything and everything related to the great Mid-Ohio area that we call home. And drum roll, please, after the noon features, our very own program director and interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, with the Now program. There's a gentleman who talks to everybody from Dr. Ruth to Dr. Art Uhlein and everybody in between. We are the talking place, WWGH1071.com. And if you are a regular listener to this program, you probably know that we oftentimes take a virtual trip to the Sunshine State. Actually, I believe North Dakota, maybe it's South Dakota, is also the Sunshine State, but I mean the one where it's warm and they grow oranges and they have alligators and swamps and the Miami Marlins, Jacksonville Jaguars, capital city of Tallahassee, but in Boca Raton, Florida, which I no longer pronounce Boca Raton, since I was corrected by the guest we're going to have on soon. I think you hear him giggling in the background. He's always good for a laugh after a wisecrack from Adam's mouth. It is, of course, the presidential scholar, published author, blogger, part-time professor, Dr. Ronald Fineman, here to talk about some political events currently happening, and not surprisingly, there's enough going on to fill the rest of the day. I'm not going to spend that long, but the next 40 minutes or so, I think there will be plenty of stuff to talk about. Now main.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me again.
No problem, Adam, Ron. Such a pleasure to have you with us on this lovely late winter day in Mid Ohio. Of course, it's either spring or summer there, but we have four seasons, and as we've kind of seen here in February, sometimes we get four seasons in the course of 1 week. Last Tuesday, it hit 77 yes. degrees in Columbus, 80 degrees in Cincinnati, probably
wow.
rivaling yeah. the temperatures there in Florida. So,
again, it's about like 80 degrees here, yes.
Yeah, it'll change, but Ron, you're not a very happy camper right now. Normally, you're certainly intense about your beliefs and what we talk about, but you're usually pretty happy-go-lucky and try to see the good in a lot of things. But my understanding is today, as we head into March, you're not a very happy camper. Why don't you tell our listeners why?
All right, I must say I've never been a fan of Donald Trump. Everybody knows that, and I've been upset at a lot of things he has said and done. But what he said on Monday, yesterday, regarding the issue of the Parkland, Florida massacre, that he would have gone in even without a weapon, you know, that is the most ridiculous, outrageous, asinine comment I've ever heard. And so I wrote on Facebook yesterday that what he should do is they should take the Secret Service away, and he should go out in public and see how long he lasts, and, you know, without any protection. That is, it's the same kind of thing like Wayne LaPierre would say, or Dana Loesch of the NRA. I mean, they're big shots when they have weapons, but he's actually going as far as to say that with a handgun or just with nothing, he would go in to try to save those kids. And that is preposterous, and it's insulting to the people who went through that tragedy. And it really angers me, infuriates me, that he would make a stupid comment like that, because it's not true. And this is a guy who was a draft dodger. He had 5 deferments. So, and you know, who is he to be making a statement like that?
There's been a lot of talk, of course, about Donald Trump's reaction to that tragic event. And again, being in Florida, it's not far from where you live. And I can't think of any words to describe not only my reaction about the event, but how the president is handling it. I mean, certainly you're more knowledgeable about the process than I am, Ron, but certainly it doesn't take a scholar like yourself to understand that his reaction is none too good. And Donald Trump certainly has a history of not thinking before he talks, not thinking before he tweets. But I'm kind of wondering if his reaction is really going to cause some serious trouble.
I would think it would, because I cannot even imagine people who support Trump thinking that's an acceptable comment to say he would have gone in without any weapon, or even if he had a weapon, and he would have saved the people. I mean, that is delusional behavior, and it makes me think it's more signs to me that he could be very definitely mentally ill, in some ways more so than this person who did this horrible massacre, because if he goes mental and he decides to start nuclear war, it's going to kill a lot more than 17 people.
So your reaction, Ron, is not just one of not approving, but still willing to talk about it. You're very angry, and I can understand why, especially being much closer to this tragic event than I am here in the Midwest.
But even so, for the whole country to believe the president would go in without any weapon and he would somehow become Superman, I mean, that's delusional. There's something really seriously wrong with his head that he would make a statement like that. I just don't understand it.
We'll address this topic a little more, but I wanted to go into some of the discussion you've brought up in your blog, which is called theprogressiveprofessor.com. And, of course, that's one of your nicknames, but it's kind of hard to say. So Ron is much easier, just 3 letters. Plus, it rhymes with Don, which is kind of cool. You know, Ronald and Donald, but two very different people.
Years ago, I was called that by some people as a joke.
I used to think, in terms of names for this show, which I usually call a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, I also thought of calling it Ronald, not Donald. So that's another name that I could use. But
I'm glad my name is not Donald. You're right.
Anyway, in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, which you write to just about every day, back on the 24th, which I think was last Saturday, if my calendar is correct. February is such a weird month. It seems to fly by in 4 or 5 days, and it's only 4 weeks long when it's not a leap year.
Yes.
So it's like, goodness sakes, I could have sworn yesterday was Martin Luther King Day, and now we're heading into March. Anyway, on the 24th, your headline was 2018 Presidents and Executive Politics Presidential Greatness Survey of 170 Political Scientists, First Experts' Assessment of Donald Trump. Now, Ron, when I saw that headline, I knew it would be, as my dad would say, a doozy. So,
yes.
Presidents are being assessed, and Abraham Lincoln, not surprisingly, had a 95 rating. That's out of 100, and pretty much he is thought of as our greatest president ever. And if not the greatest, he's certainly in the top 3. However, obviously we're wondering, how does Donald Trump stack up? Well, not very good news for Mr. Trump. His score was only 12.34, 3 points lower than the president who often is thought of as one of our worst presidents, our only bachelor president, James Buchanan. He scored 15.09. So mm-hmm. I think he's up there in presidential heaven smiling a bit, but probably not too happy that someone who holds the same office that he does has ranked at 12.34. Even William Henry Harrison, who became ill during his inauguration and only lived for about a month thereafter.
He got 19.02. That's hilarious. Yeah. He's two ahead of Trump, and he was only there for 1 month. So right. That is very funny, I think.
So, and again, these are rankings which you may or may not agree with. I suspect, Ron, that you personally agree with these rankings, but there are people that certainly support Donald Trump. And one thing the survey is saying, and I don't think anybody disagrees with this, is he is perhaps the most polarizing president of all time. Top the list.
Yes, he is.
Mentioned
more than Andrew Johnson, Andrew Jackson. Yes.
Right, 138 times. Now, polarizing is interesting. I mean, any president's going to be controversial, and part of the job is to invite dialogue. But again, we're all Americans. We're all on the same side as far as I'm concerned. So it's nice to think we can understand our differences, but still shake hands and be friends in the end. But it seems like Donald Trump is moving away from that model. So you might ask, well, who are the other presidents who are polarizing? Barack Obama was polarizing in some ways, but only 72 times. And that's just over half the number that Donald Trump is. Another recent president, George W. Bush, 74. And a president from many years ago, Andrew Jackson, 81 times. And taking a look at some other recent presidents, Reagan, 33. Bill Clinton, only 30. That was kind of surprising that Bill Clinton would get 30 mentions, but Barack Obama and George W. Bush in the 70s. Let me ask you that, Ron, because Clinton was polarizing in some ways. Did that kind of surprise you that he was less than half as polarizing as Obama and W. Bush?
Well, I think it's because recent presidents, no matter who they are, have so like become much more polarizing just by the nature of our political system that nobody compromises. So we have the two parties totally separate. It used to be they overlapped, and I think that's the way the voters and the actual public has become, whether on one side or the other. And I've seen that even in relatives of mine who have totally different views, and one relative actually blocked me because of our differences. A person I've known my whole life, and it's going on all over the place. It's breaking up families, unfortunately. So I think the recent presidents, starting particularly with Bush, the second Bush, I think the last 25 or the next 20 years or so have been really a very divisive time, and it's not getting better, it's getting worse.
So it's not just the presidents, it's the fact that politics has become more polarizing, although we do mention
yes.
that Andrew Jackson, a president from a long time ago, 81 times, Abraham Lincoln,
yes.
55. Now, we want to note that, although he's considered quite possibly our best president, the Emancipation Proclamation, all of the historical events surrounding the Civil War, made him
yes.
polarizing just by being in office. And
yes, and people I have met who come from the South originally, and I don't, of course, some of them really hate Lincoln because they're Confederate descendants, and they just resent what happened in the Civil War. It's not over down here. Even in South Florida, it's not. We have a whole city, Hollywood, where they actually spend more time on Andrew Johnson Street, than they do. I don't even know if they even have a Lincoln Street. But, I mean, the fact is there's still a great divisiveness. In Tampa, years ago, I remember being at the Tampa Zoo, and there was this woman walking around with a shirt that said, "We," and they meant the Confederacy, "we killed 300,000 of them," meaning Union soldiers. "We should have killed 3 million of them." And this is in Tampa, Florida, Central Florida, on the West Coast. And that was like 10 years ago. So imagine what it's like in Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina. I'm sure it's far worse from what I've heard and
yeah.
read in any case.
Like you, Ron, I can't really comment. The furthest south I've ever lived in was St. Louis, which is more the southern Midwest. And I wouldn't know. I don't really know much about those kinds of happenings in the Deep South, but I do know that they do occur. And as I said, it's nice to think we're all on the same side, but that is probably being way too optimistic. In terms of how Trump scored on this presidential rating system, he received 3 F's and 2 D's. He got a C in communicating with the public as well as foreign policy leadership. But that was the highest grade he got. So it's not looking too good right now for the Donald. And again, he certainly is polarizing. Even people that our supporters would say that. And,
yes, and in the last couple of weeks, things going downhill, his polling ratings, which have gone up to about 40 in some polls, is back down to 35. He's down in the basement where he was months ago. So he rose for a while, and now he's declining again back to what he had been, 35. And I think the kind of comment he made yesterday about, you know, how he would have gone in without a weapon and all that, I think that's going to polarize and make more people you know, hate him, and it's going to lower his score below 35, plus everything else that's going on, because he's siding with the NRA, basically. He's not willing to do much about gun control.
Right, and I didn't know what to think when I saw that, but let's say I wasn't overly thrilled either. It's a difficult situation, and once again, we see Donald Trump, he does say what's on his mind, and I kind of like that. I like to think, if you have an opinion, go ahead and say it. But as president, you are held to a different standard, and it's good to think over it a couple times, especially when discussing a very tragic event. But let's hope that we can see through this and move forward as Americans, and Donald Trump can hopefully use a better choice of words. And many times, if you don't have something good or relevant to say, don't say it. Now, as president, you certainly are expected to communicate regularly. And I don't know.
Yes, I want to also say that he visited a few of the people who survived in the hospital, a couple of the students who made it to the hospital and survived, and there's a photograph of him smiling next to one of the victims who just came out today, and he used that as a campaign ploy to raise money for the 2020 election. He uses that moment when he's smiling with this survivor, and I think that's unseemly to do, with somebody who's a victim like that, to do that, but he didn't ask her permission, he just went ahead and did it, so he has no limits in the disgraceful way he conducts himself.
I certainly agree that you shouldn't use a tragic event as a way to get votes and get support. I know exactly what you're referring to, and that's gotten a lot of hubbub on social media.
And also, he's smiling. I'm sorry, you can have a serious look if you're going to pose next to the victim. You don't smile. That's not appropriate.
I certainly no disagreement here, Ron. I don't know what to say. But Donald Trump certainly is different, and we'll leave it at that. You wrote yesterday in your blog about the CPAC, which I first thought you were referring to the CPAP, but actually the CPAC, which is something
Conservative Political Action Conference,
right?
Yes.
And it's an extreme right wing organization. Again, as you wrote in your blog on Monday, and becoming more so every year. And there's been some ramblings and rumblings over at the CPAC. Outspoken conservative journalist Mona Charon, is that correct? I always seem to pronounce these names wrong, but let's.
It's Charon, I believe it's pronounced.
But I got it right. How about that? Yeah. I am one for three. When she condemned
well, you are educated.
The behavior of the President Donald, as I call him, toward women, and his support of Roy Moore for the Alabama Senate seat back at the end of 2017, shows just how misogynistic the organization has become, and their full support of Donald Trump is shocking and disturbing. Also, John McCain from Arizona, a former presidential candidate, booed. He is a national hero for his involvement in the Vietnam War, spent years in prison, and faced torture. And Donald Trump, as we've discussed, was a draft evader. What's your thought on that? I know you definitely had some strong feelings about that. Can you kind of sum it up for our listeners? What's going on there?
At the CPAC, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, these people. A lot of responsible conservatives have been critical of Trump, but this is Trump's place. It's his supporters, and in many ways, I think they don't seem much different in their. Their misogyny, the fact that they let the niece, I think, of Le Pen, the person who lost the race in France and is anti-Semitic, and all that to be there. So there's elements of anti-Semitism, homophobia, nativism, misogyny, and racism there, including what happened with the former Republican National Chairman, Michael Steele, who's African-American, and they termed him at this conference as a token that he only got this job because he was black. And he was insulted by it, as I am. And, I mean, that's just crazy, that kind of thing. Actually, when he was there in 9 and 10, he helped to bring about a Republican House of Representatives by being the head of the RNC. And the fact that he's black or not, it should not even have been mentioned, but that shows you how they even have a racist element. So between that and the insulting about John McCain, who is a hero, whether you agree with him on every issue or not, and Mona Charon, the conservative journalist, being critical and being booed, I mean, this is a disgrace, and the group is becoming more marginalized every year, and it just worries me that there's this extremist element out there, and they think they're responsible and have dignity, and they don't.
Another one of your recent articles was about another topic that is getting a lot of discussion on social media, pretty much is a topic of every news broadcast, relates to teachers being armed, and you don't agree with that. Now, Ron, you're a teacher, a professor, someone in the education business. And what is your thought about that, and how do we solve the problem, and what happens if there is a security risk to a teacher or a school administrator or, of course, the students?
Well, I mean, there are ways to shut down, classrooms, to lock them with people in them. But the problem is we don't have bulletproof glass, so if you have a glass in the window that can, of course, be shot out, as happened at Parkland, there is no easy answer. Even having police on campus, if they come on campus, or one or two, and they only have a regular handgun or anything other than AR-15, how are they supposed to combat alone without backup? It's just an insane situation. But schools are not supposed to be war zones, and a teacher or an administrator is not qualified, I don't care even if he or she has gun training, to take on that kind of responsibility, which probably would lead to some students being shot accidentally. It's the kind of thing where there's no easy answer, but I think we have to ban all assault weapons, meaning AR-15s. There is no reason why these are necessary. That's a war kind of weapon. It's not a handgun. And I know the NRA is against it, but we see these young kids like David Hogg of the high school there, who I've seen a lot. I'm following him on Twitter, and he's 18 years old, and the kid's smarter than Donald Trump by far. I can see him being a possible, political candidate when he's in his 30s, because the kid has a lot of brains, and so do these other kids like Cameron Caskey and others that I've seen on TV. And I mean, these kids, they deserve better. And to say that nothing can be done, and that like Wayne LaPierre says, that a good guy with a gun can go up to a bad guy with a gun only if you have the same level of weapon that he has. And I don't think we're going to say that we're going to have police on campus with AR-15s. And even if you do, it's one against one. You need backup. It's an impossible, nightmarish situation. I don't really know what the answer is, but we do not need assault weapons, and they should be banned. Not at 18, but not at all.
Right. As we brought up last show and before, Ron, criminals don't follow the law. That's what a criminal is. So we ban AR-15s, but do they still find a way of getting them, just like we've banned many dangerous drugs, but people still find a way to get them and to sell them for profit?
Yes, unfortunately.
Is there
we should stop sale of new ones. That's what I'm saying. We can't do much about those who have them, but we should not continue to promote sales of those weapons.
So we would agree that outlawing this new sales of any AR-15s is an obviously prudent idea. It's not going to stop the problem in its tracks, but will help, and we can work toward the best possible permanent solution.
It's a terrible thing, though, because when you went to school and I went to school, we didn't have to worry about these kind of things. It's really damaging, and the kids in that school, even the ones who survived and were not hurt at all, it's going to cause, I think, emotional issues for the rest of their lives.
Right.
That's tragic.
This was unfathomable, Ron, and I remember my school days. I recall the biggest violations that the administrators had to deal with was kids smoking in the bathroom or smoking on school grounds. If that's probably what you remember also, the idea of shootings, and I would be scared to go to school. I admire kids who get up in the morning and go, and their parents. I don't know what to say. If I had some words, if I had a magic solution, I would utter it. But Unfortunately,
well, I think more and more people are going to try to do homeschooling if they're able to do it and are qualified. But, you know, unfortunately, many people cannot do that. They both need to work, and they cannot, and some are not qualified also. So there is no easy answer, but I guess I'm glad my kids are beyond that stage, but it's a terrible thing to have to worry about. And to go back to that school, even with that building closed, just being on that campus, I don't know how the kids and the faculty are going to do it. I can't imagine being a faculty member and going back there, but I guess one has to do what they have to do to make a living.
It's a difficult situation. If I had the answer, I'd provide it, but unfortunately...
But unfortunately, Donald Trump wouldn't listen to you anyway. You can be sure of that. Because he knows everything.
Well,
he has all the answers.
You know, Donald Trump is like...
He's like smart.
he's like really smart. Well, I guess that's what he says. So, since he's the president... He must know. So let's get on to a lighter topic. I try to talk about things that are happier, or at least interesting to talk about on a scientific or theoretical level. But as I say, a lot of the news is not happy stuff, and we want to discuss it as we need to bring it out into the open. Back on the 20th of February, again in your famous blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com.
I don't know if it's famous. It's getting some attention.
It was the 13-month anniversary of Donald Trump's inauguration. Of course, 13 is a lucky or an unlucky number, depending. I think it's actually a lucky number. I always kind of like that that number. So we once again bring up who will be having aspirations for the Oval Office in 2020. And Mitt Romney, he has certainly been at the forefront of discussions of late. He's a former presidential candidate. He's running for the open Senate seat in Utah with Orrin Hatch retiring after 174 years of service. That's about right.
Seems like it, yes. Actually, 42 years, which is not the all-time record, but it is one of the top, I think, 10 or 12 as long as far as service, yes.
I know Claude Pepper was in Congress for a while, so there have been so many.
Well, Claude Pepper was actually a senator for 16 years from 36 to 52, excuse me, 14 years from 36 to 50, lost his seat. 12 years later, he came back to the House. Imagine going the opposite direction for the Senate to the House from Miami, and he was there from 62 to 89, so actually he was there 27 and 14, I guess combined, but with a break of 12 years, 41 years in Congress, yeah. But he was great, and he died in office in 1989, right. But he was a great congressman and an outstanding senator, but unusual in the 30s and 40s, a liberal senator from the South. I'm amazed he lasted as long as he did.
Right, yeah. He was like 95 years old, as I recall, when he passed. But
actually, he was 89. He was born in 1900. He was 89.
Right, so yeah. A man...
Strom Thurmond was, of course, 100 and a half when he retired, and within months he died.
Right, so a man with a long history of service. And again, love him or hate him, and we admire the long tenure of Senator Hatch, but I think we agree that it was time to hang up his, I guess, you don't really use a gavel, hang up his suit, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, I wanted to add something, if you don't mind, about Claude Pepper. When he ran in 1950, he ran against George Smathers, who became the new senator in the Democratic primary. There was no Republican opposition at the time. It was a one-party state. And it's unbelievable when you really study what Smathers said against him. He pointed out, first of all, that Claude Pepper's sister was a thespian, which is a playwright. But a lot of the stupid folks in Florida at that time, with a much smaller population, thought he said that his sister was a lesbian, not a thespian. Is that crazy?
Well,
and then also he said that Claude Pepper is a procrastinator. And some people thought that was the same as masturbate. I'm not joking.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you believe it?
I was thinking that his sister wasn't Ellen DeGeneres, then she would be a thespian and a lesbian, but obviously it wasn't.
But imagine, thespian for lesbian and procrastinator becomes masturbator. This is not a joke in the hillbillies of North Florida, which was the most of the population back in 1950 before we had the big migration to South Florida. It's just embarrassing to think this is what happened in the Senate primary of 1950, and that's how he lost his seat.
Right. Well, as my mama always said, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction. Anyway, as you wrote, Ron, a week ago in your blog, Romney is well known for his bitter denunciation of Trump's candidacy in 2016 and then being manipulated by Trump for the possible post of Secretary of State, but passing him by for that position. So it'll be interesting to watch. Do you think Romney is a serious candidate, and what might be his chances of being on the ballot as a Republican nominee again for the second time in recent memory?
Well, it would depend on what happens once he gets into the Senate, which it assumes he will, but there will be a Democratic opponent. But I think that if Trump is still in office or Pence is in office, and it is possible that Romney would challenge either Trump or Pence based on what they're saying and doing at the time, because he is a true conservative, and many conservatives, as we know, do not like Trump. And so he's not going to say it now, but I think there's a chance he would want to try again, because I think he still has the ambition, Romney does, to be president of the United States. And he would be, interestingly, if he was elected, two months after he was inaugurated, he would be 74 years old. And that article also points out Joe Biden is apparently getting more serious about running, and he would be 78 right after the election. So we would have two people, 78 and almost 74, in that race. And the question is that what the American people want, even if they admire either or both, or do we really want to go to a younger generation? That's the issue.
And we've discussed this before, Ron, a topic which is interesting to me. That is the state that the president is from. And Romney was, of course, the governor of Massachusetts. Massachusetts is a rather Democratic state. But
yes.
Now I guess he's from Utah, which is a very Republican state, not to mention a state with not a lot of people, so the electoral votes aren't quite as important. So interestingly, might it be better if Romney finds a way to be from Massachusetts running for president, knowing that a conservative could win a liberal state as well as possibly influence the votes of other New England states, which also tend to be more Democratic? Or would he have to run from Utah, or is that something we need to find out more about?
If he's going to be senator from Utah, he can't disown Utah and say he's from Massachusetts. And honestly, he did not win Massachusetts in 2012. Just because he was their governor does not mean that he could win New England. He did not, the New England states. But if he's going to claim and be a senator from Utah, it has to be from that state, even though he has an earlier history in Massachusetts and a childhood in Michigan when his father was governor of Michigan and was trying to run for president 50 years ago. It's not necessarily important to have to be from a big state. We've had people like, after all, Bill Clinton was elected from Arkansas. It's not a big state in electoral votes. And of course, not always do people win, but like George McGovern was from South Dakota. He didn't win, but he's still the nominee of the Democratic Party. So it's not essential to be from a big state as far as when you're running.
I'm just thinking if he has a connection to historically Democratic New England and the Northeast part of the country, that might help him, even if he doesn't actually win Massachusetts. But again, maybe being from Utah, it's kind of close to California. That's the most populous state. It could help swing that election. I mean, who knows? Maybe I just look a little too much into
California
the state.
As it stands now. Years ago, yes, but not the way it is now. No, California is very blue. Although, interestingly, Dianne Feinstein was repudiated by the state convention. She'll probably still win, but the state convention really wants a younger person. She's going to be 85 by next year. And honestly, I think it's time for her to retire, but she probably will win that seat. But she's seen as more moderate, so there is a split within California Democrats about her.
Now, traveling back to the northeastern quadrant of the country, that's where many of the possible Democratic candidates hang their hat. We talked about Joe Biden. I think he's from Delaware, kind of like somewhere bordering the South and Atlantic Coast and Northeast. And, of course, Oprah Winfrey, I don't think she's really going to run, but there has been plenty of talk. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and one of my favorite people to talk about, I call him the Chapstick Kid, which would be Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy III. And also there's Elizabeth Warren, from Massachusetts. And there's also Cory Booker from New Jersey. And Chris Murphy from Connecticut, who I really like. Chris Murphy, Senator Chris Murphy, who the NRA has declared war on, along with Cory Booker and Elizabeth Warren and a few others. They actually gave their names
kind of interesting? Yeah. I mean, again, I recall two recent Democratic presidents who were from the Deep South, Clinton and Carter, But it seems like all of these Democratic candidates are from the Northeast. Now, that is known to be a more Democratic part of the country. But
well, also California. Also right. California. Kamala Harris was mentioned. And although not mentioned, I think, you know, there's also the possibility of Eric Garcetti, the mayor of L.A., who certainly is of the same viewpoint, you know, and, you know, so, you know, at least those two as well. But, yes, the Northeast and... Although there are people like Sherrod Brown of Ohio, which is the Midwest, or Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, if they, you know, it might be an advantage to come from the Midwest. I think it actually would be.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked earlier in the show about polarizing, and again, being someone who's, I call myself a geography geek, it almost seems like the area where presidential candidates are coming from has become polarizing. Now, Texas, for example, another very populous state, tends to be a place where Republicans come from, for example, both Bushes. But of course, there are exceptions. I'm not mistaken. President Lyndon Johnson was a Texan, but things have changed quite a bit. Do you see that increasing more, Ron, where we could almost guarantee that the Democratic candidates will be from the Northeast? Or might that change and we might wake up one day and there's a Democratic candidate who is from Dallas? What are your thoughts on that?
That would have to happen if Texas becomes more blue, which I think it will over time with the growing Hispanic Mexican American population that will be eligible to vote. So I think the prediction is that Arizona and also Texas will turn blue, but not yet, probably in the mid-2020s. And then I think it is possible to believe that we could have a candidate from there. But you also have to realize the Bushes from Texas are not like the Republican Party of Texas now. They were much more moderate, even George W. Bush. So, I mean, he comes across as extremely moderate on immigration and on so many other issues when you look back at what he stood for and what he believes now. So the Republican Party has become more extremist right-wing in Texas, and that... and you know, but at the same time, we are going to see a growing population over time, unless they're prevented by all kinds of limitations in the state legislature, which of course got to be fought in court. That we should have Texas and Arizona become blue in the 2020s, and I would think by then the Democrats will have the advantage for the presidency long term once they can take over Texas, particularly.
So that might change, just because we see certain states, Texas, Arizona, come to mind, and then the Rocky Mountain states.
Yes, and also you got to remember, California used to be Republican until the 1990s, and New England used to be also Republican, and now they're Democratic areas. So things are not forever. They do change based on population and migration and all that. So, but I think long-term, and I've said this in writing, I think the Democrats have a bright future, but short-term, they have a major problem.
Right. And of course, Ronald Reagan was governor of California, but that was obviously part of that. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, who became governor, he was a Republican.
Well, but he was a Republican that was more like a Democrat. He was related to the Kennedys. He was very liberal. He was not a traditional Republican, Schwarzenegger. So he was more of a star. That's how he got in, because of his star.
So it's almost a case where maybe this geographical polarization, if that's a valid term, is at its peak, and it might start changing a bit, or even swinging, where we might see a presidential candidate from a very traditional, at least in recent history, Republican state like Texas or Arizona. But that's all part of the fun of politics. You never quite know. Just Ron, just when you think you figured everything out and that you can make these predictions,
you can never make up your mind. It's always changing. Yes.
Right, you get thrown a curve. Now, you put down in your blog about the two grandpa candidates. I didn't actually realize Romney was that old. He seems younger. You know, sometimes the candidates seem younger. Sometimes they seem older.
Well, he was born in 1947, so he'll be 71 in March. So he'll be 74 3 years from now. If he's inaugurated, he'll be 2 months short of 74. Yeah.
Now, we've talked before with the younger voters, again, late teens, 20s, 30s. Would they be okay with a president who's pushing 80, or would they prefer to have someone like Joe Kennedy, who's still in his 30s?
Well, he'll be 40 at the time of the election, Joe Kennedy. I would think with this generation, what's just happened in Parkland, Florida, a lot of people now becoming 18, I think, are going to turn toward the Democrats, and they're going to be wanting a younger candidate. Not necessarily Joe Kennedy, because he's only in the House, but maybe a Chris Murphy will be 47, or maybe a Kamala Harris will be in her early 50s. That's considered young, I mean, for a presidential candidate. I think there's a very good chance that the old-timers are not going to get the nomination, and that we're going to get someone someone in their 40s or 50s, you know, becoming president and maybe even vice president. And I think that probably is the way to go. But it's just a question of which one can catch on. That's the issue.
It just is interesting. I mean, we talked about differences between Obama and Trump. I could spend the rest of the week discussing those. But one of the differences is that Donald Trump, although I think he seems a little younger. He is the oldest president ever to be inaugurated in the first term.
Yes.
And Obama was not the youngest, but he was one of the youngest. He was in his he was 47, 48, I believe, late 40s when
he was 47. He was I think he was the fourth youngest, if I'm correct.
Right, so he's one of the youngest.
Yeah.
And again, their political views are obviously very different. But from ages, we jumped about 22, 23 years in inauguration age. Essentially, Donald Trump is one generation older than Obama. Ron, do you think that
15 years difference?
Right, yeah. That this big difference in ages, which I would imagine is probably the biggest difference ever from one president to another. Again, in terms of
actually, no, because George W. Bush was 1920. No, George H.W. Bush was 1924, and Bill Clinton was 1946. That's 22 years difference between the first Bush and Clinton.
Right, but aren't Trump in terms of inauguration, isn't there like 23, 24 years between Trump and Obama? It's rather close, no matter how you look at it. But interestingly, Ron, we were talking about this a few days ago. There have been many cases, especially recently, where one president was a generation apart from his predecessor or successor. Bottom line is, and this is already getting kind of confusing, but I guess that's part of the fun of talking about presidents. Again, issues and competence aside, do you think that this generation separating Trump and Obama is a good way for people to decide which candidate and decide, well, is 70 the right age? Is it too old? Is 47 good? Is it too young? Or do we not worry about age whatsoever? Is someone like Joe Biden, again, who'll be 78, as long as he's qualified, who cares how old he is?
Well, I would say the qualifications should matter the most, and I think both Romney and Biden come across as qualified. But since they are going to be in their mid to late 70s, it might be better to go for a Chris Murphy or Kamala Harris, or Joe Kennedy, somebody in their 40s or 50s.
And also bring up a female candidate in Kamala Harris. Are we ready for a female president? And certainly that will be discussed for the next 100 years. Did Hillary Clinton run?
I think so.
Too early.
I think we were ready in 2016. And I think by 2020, the 19th Amendment for women's suffrage will be 100 years old. It would be very appropriate to have a woman president if that could happen. And I think she would be probably, she and Amy Klobuchar would probably be the two best possible choices. And Amy's at least from Minnesota, Midwest. And, you know, it could be she could be a very good choice. I like her a lot.
And we'll close out this segment. Again, time always seems to fly. But let's just turn the clock back 30 years, Ron. I'm going to ask myself the same question that I'm going to ask you. If someone were to say, Professor Feynman, do you think we're going to have a black president before we have a female president? Or we'll have a female president before a black president? What would you have told that person if you were asked that question 30 years ago?
Probably I would have said a female president first, especially after Geraldine Ferraro was the running mate of Walter Mondale in 84, although they lost. I really thought we would have a woman president first. I don't think I could have believed we would have had an African-American president, and certainly not someone with a name like Barack Hussein Obama. That is still startling to me, that he actually was able to be nominated and elected. But then I never would have thought that a person named Donald Trump, who was a public figure, but came across as quirky in so many ways, that he would be president. So, I mean, this is the way it is. You never know what the future is going to hold.
Let me go ahead and make an even better question that you brought that up, and I should have just asked it this way to begin with. So 30 years ago, somebody would have asked you, Ron, in my crystal ball, there are three kinds of presidents that might seem unusual. Which do you think will not get elected? And the choices would be a female, a black person, and somebody with no previous elected political or military experience. And your answer, what do you think your answer would be?
I would have said the person without any military or government experience would have been the least likely.
And you also feel that the black president would also not be likely. But interestingly enough,
probably the woman first and black, but it didn't work out that way.
Right.
Ended up the second choice is in a first, the third one second, and the first one hasn't happened.
Right. So interestingly, and I would have felt the same way. I mean, my answer is identical to yours. And interestingly, that wasn't what occurred. So as we talked about earlier in the show, just when you think you've figured something out, just when you thought you could understand how the system works, you get thrown a curve and things are totally different. And that's, I guess, part of the fun of waking up every morning.
That's what makes politics fun.
Yeah, you just never know.
That's what makes politics fun.
You never know what's going to happen. And on that note, we unfortunately have to close out this segment of A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor. Thanks again, Dr. Ron Feynman, for being on with us.
Thank you very much again, Adam. I had a great time.
More interesting discussion and more interesting forecasting. And I don't think I could tell you what we're going to talk about next week, because I'm sure, as we've alluded to multiple times in the last 40 minutes, there will be some news story that will warrant us taking time out of our schedule to discuss it on the great...
And probably something more outrageous than his comment that he would go in without any weapon to the school. That is so ridiculous, you know?
I guess we shall find out. As I say, love him or hate him, the President Donald is a man who will entertain and surprise.
He never bores anybody. He's never boring, that's for sure.
He certainly would. I agree. You don't need coffee with the guy. He's like a human cup of coffee. Okay. thanks again, Ron. I do invite our listeners to listen, to go to his blog, bookmark it, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and look him up on Facebook under The Progressive Professor or Ronald Feynman. Have a great rest of your day, Ron. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.
Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.